Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Julie Bates with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 314. You know, and in 314 episodes, there's been a lot of stuff. There's been a lot of talk. You know, I go over stuff, and then a year or two later, I go over it again, you know, for people that are new to this. And it's a lot of, I've gone over a lot of topics. There's a few I kind of choose not to go over because I certainly don't want people to misunderstand and go do something with their dog that wasn't appropriate. But I've covered just an awful lot of stuff. And right now is the height of the competitive season, right? It's just, there are, every venue is testing. There's trials and tests and competitions and events and all that stuff going on. And people are just, you know, really into it and spending maybe more money than they should and traveling far and getting a lot of angst and trying to get the next, you know, you got a problem with your dog, so whoever your set of experts is, you get hold of them to try and get the answer to it. And so, and I'm watching all this because I'm smack in the middle of it, of course. But something happened recently that kind of made me just stop and think again for a minute. You just get caught up, you know, in the activity and the aggressiveness about it and trying to get as much done as you can. And I think there's a few things that at least I've always wanted to keep in mind while I'm doing this. And one of them is I'm going to tell just a couple stories. So this isn't a how-to. I'm not going to solve any of your problems, of your dog anyway, with this. But I just want to get people who are listening to this thing with some routine time frame to think about things. And I'm going to tell a story. In the very first book I wrote, which was the paperback, The Pointing Labrador, which was very slim in terms of information, so which is why I came back with that second one. But and it's out of print, so it looks like $1 zillion on eBay or something. It's ridiculous. Not worth it. Not worth it. But in that book, I told a story from my early days of training pointing labs. And somebody had brought me a dog from a very good pointing lab kennel that is still a very good pointing lab kennel. Little yellow guy, just a real cutie. And they wanted the dog trained. You know, this is supposed to be the good place to send the dog. And so he was just a little cute little yellow guy. He was 6-7 months old when I got him. So I start doing all the, you know, obedience and then going to force fetch, and I couldn't force fetch him. Now this is hundreds of dogs ago. I think maybe today I'd have a little better shot at it. But I couldn't get this dog force fetched. I mean, it's just, he just didn't get it. Actually, as you might know, I'm the one that really didn't get it. I didn't know how to adjust for this dog as well as needed to be. But I just tried and tried. And finally, I started by throwing it and then bringing it closer and closer with the word fetch until just through working really hard and attrition, I got him to fetch it up because I said, just by kind of fooling him like it was a retrieve. That's not really a real force fetch. But anyway, I got him where he would deliver to hand and do all that. And then if you stretch the marks out very long, he just didn't want to get out there that far. And then when we switched over to water, he didn't really want to get in the water. And I remember one day distinctly, we just, the mark was across a channel. It was just like maybe 40 feet over there. And then he got over there and got it. And he just sat there and he wasn't going to come back. You know, and I'm just sitting there going, oh, this dog. This dog is just no good. But he did, you know, he did like when you shot birds, and he pointed, of course, and he did like when you shot a bird, and none of those were too far. So his owner took him home and did some hunting with him and came back and said, you know, I want this dog to handle. And I said, I don't think I can do that. I didn't even really force fetch him, and it's like, I don't think I can do that. And he said, well, tell me how. And so I did, and my ex did a little, told him some stuff to do, and then he went off, right? He went off and did it, and I'm like, yeah, good luck, bud. This will never work. I couldn't even get him to fetch it unless I just made it a game. And then there was a pointing lab test down near Colorado Springs, and he had entered the master, you know, and I'm just like, oh, geez. I don't even want to watch this. And he passed. Okay, so that's with multiple marks, land blinds, water blind, all that, and then steady. And he passes a thing, and I'm just sitting there looking at that, saying, "Wow, I never would have believed that." The other part of this story, and I won't go on too long. The other part of this story was, I had a client that was from Florida that drove all the way to Colorado with his dog, hunted, kind of hunted his. With his, he had another dog of his own and his buddies, and they hunted kind of their way across the plains, and then they came to Colorado. And they said, "Have you ever heard of a guy named such and such?" And it was this individual, and they had run into him in Kansas with this dog of his, and they had they put theirs away and hunted with his because he was so incredible. So incredible. And then another guy one time was on an airplane flying somewhere, and they were talking to, and it was this guy, and his dog had just done, something amazing. And I called the dog the Yellow Phantom, because I must have heard from at least 8 or 10 people that somebody had run into him hunting all over the place, and this dog was amazing. And he just was incredible. He would hunt and range well and point and hold and all kinds of stuff. And this was a dog I couldn't force fetch, and that became this dog that inspired so many people to go buy puppies from these people and to get their dog trained. I mean, it was incredible, the Yellow Phantom. And I just remember thinking, there's no way in a million years I would ever have believed that that would happen, ever, ever, ever. Now he was younger, and this is obviously a dog that had to mature into some of this stuff. People with young dogs that aren't keeping you happy in the beginning, he could have just given up because the trainer said, "I don't know, I don't think I can do that," and he did not. And he found ways. I don't even know what they were, and I don't care, because they weren't horrible tough stuff. It was just probably a lot of attrition, and this dog was phenomenal and known by people all over the country. So I remember, and I wrote about that. I told that story in the very first book. It's like, this is incredible. I mean, it would have been so easy to give up. And he did not. He did not even consider that. I mean, he didn't read me saying, I don't think I could do that. He didn't read that as either she's a terrible trainer or this is a terrible dog. He just thought, well, I'll figure something out. And he stayed with it, and he did it, and had the dog of a lifetime. And I remember when he lost the dog to old age, that it just tore him apart. That was he lost a member of his family. And it was just an amazing story, and I learned something there. I learned that because a dog, when you get them at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months, if they're not up to par, then that doesn't mean they're not up to par. It just means that they're a slower dog to develop. And another dog like that, who is now, I believe, in the Pointing Lab Hall of Fame as a puppy, he was is a little cute guy, and he would got him in for training and got him force fetched. And got him basic obedience. He did all that stuff. Wouldn't pick up a duck. Just wouldn't. Just said, "Ugh, I'm not gonna do that." Even after he's force fetched, he just said, "I'll pick up any upland bird, but I'm not doing ducks." And his owner was just horrified. I said, "Oh no, the dog is no good." And then some of the other dogs that had come in when he came in were staying to go through the whole handling program. Now, being a little bit wiser, at this point, I had said, "Take him home. Go hunting with this dog so he sees why we're doing all this kind of demanding stuff, why he's force fetched, why, pick up any bird, don't really assess it." I mean, I could go make him pick up a duck, but I want the dog to go get the duck, right? And his owner was very disappointed, because it was like I had washed the dog out. And I hadn't. I just said, "Go hunt with him. Let him know why. The training, why we're doing the, what you get. If you do the training stuff, then you get to go do that stuff." So he took the dog hunting, brought it back. That period of time between being a doofy puppy and him hunting came back, it's TC dog, produced many TC dogs, master hunter. Senior hunter. He almost got the master, but then his owner quit running him. Just a fantastic dog that's produced fantastic dogs. But at least by that time I had learned, you know, just don't wash anybody out or don't go, no, this will never happen, but let the dog grow up. And then, like I said, the dog's in the APLA Hall of Fame now. And he's gone too. Also, when he left, his owner was devastated beyond belief. It's like he lost an appendage to himself, which is when you take the time and patience with these dogs, a lot of times it is very worth it. And now I'm going to, I got one more story like that. So the thing that I learned with that stuff is don't always believe exactly what you see on a youngster. Sometimes they're just not ready for all that stuff. And I know there's probably a lot of dogs that are given up on or sold or something else. You know, and maybe they never would be amount to a lot. But boy, I've seen it be the other way many, many times. I have one more story, and this is a recent one. And everybody in Colorado is going to know exactly who I'm talking about. But we had a fella come out that bought his dog from this very same kennel that I'm talking about, that the Yellow Phantom was from. He came out with the club training, and we would have, you know, big stuff set up, and he'd just run his dog. He'd just do what we were doing. And it was obvious his dog didn't really know the rules. I mean, he'd never trained with people that were going and running events. And you know, there he is again, and his dog is, I mean, the dog loved retrieving. The dog was a powerful kind of a dog, and 4 or 5 years old, you know, so totally mature. And he'd hunted a lot, and he, you know, could chase birds, and he was a good pointer, but he would, you know, and then he'd go on the gun and just all kinds of things. And then he would run them on blinds, even though he really didn't ever train for that, ever. He had done just some, you know, dropping it at the edge of the golf course, walking a long ways and then sending him back. I mean, that had been his training for, you know, and he was just not schooled as most of the other things. So it's like, oh, yeah, he's here. Let's help him. And one time he asked me, you know, what's the difference between a mark and a blind after he'd been running with us? So I try to explain it. I'm not sure I got it. I'm not sure if I was effective or not. And so he just keeps training his dog, and he trains him all the time, which I think is the key. He and this dog is his buddy, and they train all the time. Now, what they do, I would not do. You know, and he's even taken me out and shown me, and I'm like, okay, let's just do some control things first. Let's do some teaching things first. You know, and he's a real nice guy, but, you know, there's no hope here. There just isn't any hope, right? Because this dog's crazy, and neither one of them know what they're doing. And he, you know, every now and then he would, like, blow a whistle and cast at the same time, even though he'd never really trained all that stuff. And, you know, we're just going, yeah, well, dog's really good. So I was judging the recent Colorado test. Since I'm not running dogs anymore, I'm judging. And he got certified last fall. He got certified and done well. You know, the rules there are real. You don't have to be steady. You can grab a bird. You just got to do 2 watermarks. And he passed that. And then he's telling us all that he wants to, you know, he wants to run the other stuff. So we're kind of, you know, sure, give it a go. You know, we'll help you and stuff. Anyway, he got pretty serious about it. But I'm going to say again, he trains every day, all the time. And even screwball stuff that, you know, was not what I would do. But he would train all the time. And he got real serious here in the last just couple months. All right, couple months. Dog's 4 or 5 years old, somewhere in that range. And so I helped him with a few things, but I just taught him how to practice casting and lining. Basically, it's like first you gotta teach him, you know, don't ever lie to him. Cast him directly at the bird instead of the edge of sketch. We'll just get him downwind and then get him a big over. And then the dog is a high-powered dog, and he worked with another member of the club. And I don't know what they did. I don't know what it was. But it was amazing. And I'm judging, and I'm judging the master, right? And we have the APLA, you know, double blind, diversion bird, same thing in the water. Then you got to be steady on all the birds. You cannot chase a bird. I mean, you have to be a finished pointing lab. And I'm judging this, and we have the land series. And it was kind of a challenging one. It was a kind of tight marks and all that stuff. And a blind right up the middle, right over top of one of the marks. And he did it. Not only he did the marks, he's always pretty good at that, because see the bird, get the bird. He's one of those kind of guys. And then the blind is right over the top. And it's kind of tight, and you could lose them in the trees and stuff. And I watch him run this blind, which the dog has never been through the tee. He's never been through any of that. Never been through the swim by. None of it. And he goes and he runs the blind. I don't know, 2-3 whistles. And I'm just, yay. You know, well, at least he's going to make it to the next series. And so we have a water series with a breaking bird real close that they have to swim by. And then a water blind right up the middle of that, angling over through the cattails and up in the trees and stuff. And he does that. Right? He does that. And it's amazing. And then we're going to Upland. He's the last dog, because he was a walk-up. Last dog to run. Last dog to run. There, it's like a minefield of birds, right? And unlike a lot of places in the country, we kind of make you have your 4 bird contacts, looking for dogs at point and stuff like that. So, it's like if you were in the middle of a popcorn machine. There's just birds everywhere. And here he is. It's his first master field he's ever run. Only other one he's done is an advanced field. High wind. The wind is blowing. There are birds everywhere, and they're all coveying up in this one kind of low spot, right? And there's cattails, dead cattails, no place you ever want your pointing lab to be near. And that was just on the edge of the field. And he goes and gets his first point, and he's steady. And I'm just watching all this stuff, and then he gets another one, and then he was going to have 4 bird contacts. It was his third point. And he goes on point, and the gunner shoots, but only wounds it. That's all. Just wounds it. And then I release him, and he sends the dog. And as he's going down there, high wind, 2 birds fly up at the same time. And so, being kind of a hunting dog, he's going to chase one of them. Well, you're out if you chase a bird. Even if you think it's the bird that you were sent to retrieve, you cannot chase it. And his owner blows a sit whistle, which was the exact right thing to do, not something that he had shown a lot of prior to that. And the dog sat, and I'm sitting there going, oh my gosh, he sat. And the birds fly away, and then he casts him back to where this wounded bird had landed and run into the dead cattails. And so we see, I'm just shocked right now that he didn't chase any birds and that he sat on the whistle. And then he takes a cast away from where the birds went, back towards where this other one was. And it had run, and it had run down into the cattails because it was only wounded. And he disappears into the cattails. And it's so windy that you can't, normally, you know, you can kind of tell where a dog is. They were just swaying all over the place. And I'm just sitting there now, my jaw's hanging down. I have no idea. None. And then he comes back. Here he comes back with the wounded bird, back up out of the cattails, back up the hill, past where all the birds are flying all over the place, and hands it to his owner. So we said, and any of you run APLA tests, that, well, we just said, we'll leash him up. Well, he thought we'd failed him. I'm because birds flew and he had to handle his dog. I think he thought that was all terrible. And it was like, he goes, oh, man, I'm sorry. It's like, no, leash him up. You're done. You made it. And the dog became a master pointing retriever. And I would have bet everything I own and every dollar I have that was never going to happen with those two because, you know, he just wasn't trained and he just, you know, he didn't practice things the right way and he never did casting or lining drills. Anyways, and I'm pretty sure that that's going to continue and there's going to be some purple ribbons showing up in his house. But the point I want to make on that is, would I train a dog the way he did? No, 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 I would not do that. And he just was doing what he saw other dogs do. That's what he did. He just figured it out on his own and did all that. And he got kind of just smoothed out a little bit on some of the things. But when you want something a lot and you invest in it a lot, like the Yellow Phantom thing, like this dog, and you might go, as long as you're not beating up on them, you know, that none of these dogs were ever heavy pressure, any of that kind of stuff. But the guys just went out and worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. They didn't do what a pro would always do. And they were so connected with their animals, so connected, that they could get them to do stuff just because they asked. And again, that's not the way I would really want to train a dog, but they could get them to do stuff because they asked, and the dogs get these titles and do these amazing things that others of us spend hundreds and hundreds of hours doing the right thing and doing it in the right order, which I'm still going to say, that's still the shortest distance between two points is the straight line. Do them as right as you can. But maybe more importantly than that is the investment that these people had in the work with their dog. I think that there is, for those who look at it this way, there is a greater power going on right there, and there is a bigger thing happening than can just be seen. I think the heart and soul and spirit that is invested in that thing manifests a lot of stuff. So if you're not into that stuff, you know, or you're just cranking them out and stuff, go right, you know, again, ignore me. But I've seen, I would call like miracle things that had no business happening that happened because of what those individuals gave to that animal and what that animal gave back, all without the training tricks. And you got to be tough on them, and you got to, you know, you got to do what so-and-so told you. I just think that's I just wanted to share that with everybody because, you know, I've been a professional trainer for 30 years, you know, and I think people should do things the way that, you know, I have found to work. But in the end, you got to do you, and you've got to, but you want to kind of make it easy and not work too hard, I'm not sure about that. But what those two, especially those two guys that I'm talking about, the Yellow Phantom and this dog recently, it was part of their life was training and working with this dog. And even though a lot of it was probably something I would never do, in the end, it netted them, you know, recognition and goals from people like me that are, you know, kind of stickly about what the rules are and how you do this. So there's more to training than just doing what somebody says, following the orders, being tough on them if they don't do what you say. There's another much greater element to this that is not often talked about that is also very effective. The heart, soul, spirit part of this stuff and the investment of time and energy and belief in the animal. You know, if somebody walks up and tells you, well, this dog will never be able to do that, and you believe it, then it's true. But if you don't necessarily believe it, then you're probably right too. I just really would like to get that out. It's a kind of a short one today and kind of one of those, you know, fluffy ones. But I think it's probably one of the biggest training tools of all is that level of investment and caring and belief. It really helps a lot, especially in these hard, tough, you know, competitive things and the pressure's on, particularly if you're a pro. Holy cow, you know, you got to deliver. But be careful that trying to deliver, you don't ignore the heart and soul of the dog that you are also working with. So that's my kind of silly one for this weekend. I'm going to be traveling, doing some judging. I may miss one here and there, but I will try to make them up. Meanwhile, I wish everyone success in whatever you're doing with your dog. And I hope that you also invest the personal kind of enjoyable, affectionate, fun side of this, you know, because that's as important to your animal as it is you. That's today's. I will We'll be back next week on Monday, and I hope everybody has great luck and great success this season.